This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Hey, RotoViz radio listener. This is Curtis Patrick from the Dynasty Command Center podcast, and I've got a special deal for you today. Go to rotoviz.com, click the subscribe button, put the 12-month subscription in your cart, and use promo code RVRadio2021. That's RVRadio2021, and you're going to save 10%. Taking advantage of this deal, getting your hands on what's included in the package, is the best way to enhance your performance this year. So go to rotoviz.com and subscribe now.
Hey everyone, before we get started, I just want to take a moment to tell you about Blue Wire Hustle, a brand new program where you can host your own podcast here at Blue Wire. Hustle is created to give everyone the opportunity to take your podcast to the next level, or if you want to host a podcast and just don't know where to start, Hustle is the perfect place for you. As part of the program, you'll receive personal cover art, Q&As with Blue Wire's top podcasters, access to the community Discord, an e-learning course full of tips and tricks, and on top of all of that, we'll help get your show pushed to Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, and all other listening platforms. And the best part is, you can get all this for only $15 a month, the same rate as any other hosting site would charge you just for the initial setup. So whether you're starting from scratch or you have an existing show that you're wanting to grow, Hustle is an open door to leveling up your sports podcasting experience. Acceptance into the program is limited, so get your application in today. To apply, go to bwhustle.com/join. Check out the description box in this episode for more information, but that's bwhustle.com/join.
Welcome into the Fantasy Football Mailbag, a RotoViz podcast. Welcome back to the 2021 season. We, as always, are dedicated to answering all of those fantasy football questions. I'm your host, Mike Randall. You can follow me on Twitter at RandallRant. And today, folks, one of my longstanding friends, someone I've known since he began in this industry, and now he's grown to killing it, Connor Allen. He's the lead betting analyst at 4for4 Football. Podcast he has at Ryan Noonan, Move the Line NFL, is fantastic. Great guy, knows fantasy football, knows betting content, can make you a lot of money both in fantasy and in gambling. Follow him on Twitter at Connor Allen, NFL. Connor, great to have you here on the mailbag to kick off the 2021 season.
Yeah, Mike, I've known you for a long time, man. It is crazy how long we've been connected, and I really appreciate you having me on here.
You know, I remember, Connor, I was just starting out. I was begging Colin Kelly to let me help him with RotoViz editing. And I remember following you, and you had the cool site, the Fantasy Football Matrix, I think it was called. And I remember seeing this guy. I didn't know what you look like. I'm like, this guy knows his stuff. Everything you put out, I was liking and following on Twitter. And now, of course, you're killing it across the board, man. So just talk about how you got started in the industry and how you're at the point today where you're doing so much great stuff for 4for4 and that Moving the Line podcast.
That's so funny. You're one of the few who remember. Yeah, I actually started that in college. I kind of just realized that I liked fantasy sports and football a lot more than everyone else around me. But, you know, I was kind of too scared to put my face out there because I was like, you know, 19. And I was like, you know what, I'm just going to like hide behind this little, you know, pseudonym and make a site and just kind of go for it. But, I got to this point, basically just was grinding that. I submitted a guest article to Warren Sharp for his like book, the yearly book. For his contest when I was a senior in college, it ended up winning and I got very lucky.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. That's right. I forgot that. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so that's kind of how it, you know, my trajectory was up from there. And obviously that was some good exposure and got, you know, mentioned to some people at Roto World, Went there, learned a lot, learned how to write a lot better, through the ups and downs there. But, mainly my, passion is something that I think that my niche turned out to be was, betting. And that's something that I started writing a player prop column at the, now defunct company, the Quant Edge, a few years ago. And since then, I've been really hitting my player prop column hard, and, 4 for 4 ended up taking a chance on me and Noonan, launching our betting vertical last year, and it's kind of where we're at now. And I'm excited for this year. I think it's going to be a great season. And with all these states legalizing sports betting, I'm telling you, this is the best time to get in. If you're a fantasy player, if you do projections, you are smarter than the sports book. So you can beat this. You can make money.
I totally agree. I followed you for so long, man. And I do betting stuff for Action Network as well, but I've definitely become a better wagerer following your stuff and learning. You have definitely kept me from going on tilt on many occasions. You got to stick to the analytics. You have to trust the process. Those, sort of outliers are going to happen, but just a great mind here for fantasy as well. So I'm thrilled to have you on. And Connor, I'm not going to bury the lead anymore. When this drops, it will be on Friday this week. We're recording it here on Tuesday, June 1st. So by the time we get to June 4th, this question may be answered. Tell me, where's Julio Jones going?
This is tough. So I'll say that I think he's going to New England, but the people who I talk to that are most plugged in are saying a few different things. They've narrowed it down to 4 options, they think, and these are pretty widely reported at this point, but Patriots, Chargers, Rams, Titans. My money's on the Patriots, but I would say that it is very, very likely to be one of those 4 teams.
If Julio Jones goes to Tennessee, and look, if he goes there, it proves that social media works. A.J. Brown has a video, Derrick Henry, they all want him to come there. What do you think that would do for Ryan Tannehill? Because, of course, people were very hesitant to buy into Tannehill when he goes to Tennessee. He's backing up Mariota. Then he gets the job, and now he's been uber efficient, right, in a run-heavy offense. How do you think that would affect Ryan Tannehill in fantasy? I mean, I feel like he would catapult up, no, Connor, if Julio Jones and A.J. Brown are your wide receivers?
Yeah, I mean, if he's not efficient, I think that there's something wrong at that point. I mean, you're throwing to 2 guys who are just incredible talents. And also with their defense probably taking a little bit of a step back, I think we're going to see a little bit of extra volume from this Titans passing offense. If you have Julio Jones and A.J. Brown, I think that that's definitely not a bad thing. Ryan Tannehill is an intriguing pick if that happens.
Yeah, and I'm work on the RotoViz projection machine we have here where you do the projections for each team. And I have been on Team Anthony Firkser, but if Julio Jones goes there, Connor, I think my Anthony Firkser truther status is going to come down a little bit. We'll see. It sounds like he's going to be dealt sometime this week. Who knows? But I guess what you're saying is Atlanta is out of the picture. It looks like he is going to be traded.
Yeah, I would say that's almost a certainty at this point. There's some other stuff that and different ways that you can, I think, take advantage of that still in betting markets and in fantasy right now.
Well, at this point last year, and I'm so glad it looks like COVID is starting to get in the rearview mirror, we weren't even sure if we were going to have a season, but we had Christian McCaffrey, Saquon Barkley were sort of the clear number 1 and number 2 in fantasy. This year, Connor, I feel like it's wide open. McCaffrey's still in front, not as huge of a lead because it's what have you done for me lately, right? He was injured last year, so all of a sudden we forget how dominant he was in 2019. Dalvin Cook is an issue, of course, in Minnesota, uber productive. Barkley's back, but now they said they're going to slowly sort of implement him and work him back in. Alvin Kamara's coming off that 6 TD performance, and I will tell you this. I was in the flex leagues with Jake Seeley, Connor. I had an undefeated season there going into the very last week against Jody Smith, and I ran into Kamara. I lost an undefeated flex league season because of Alvin Kamara. So certainly he's in play. Derrick Henry, some people going Travis Kelce. You can't win your league with those first few picks, but you can lose it. So talk about those top few picks in PPR leagues and how do you handicap it there among a lot of great choices?
Yeah, so CMC is still number 1 for me. Barkley and Kamara are pretty tough because, as you said, Barkley is now coming off of an injury. The reports are basically that he's going to be eased back in. And in the first month or so of football, you're not really looking to spend a first-round pick on a guy who's, might not have his full workload. But the thing is, your fantasy football league is not won in the first month. It's won in the playoffs. And so I think that depending on the leagues that you're in, depending on like how big of a league it is, and if you're trying to take more risk, i.e. like a 10-man friends league versus the FFPC main event, you're obviously going to take varying strategies with how much risk you're willing to take. So I think that obviously depends on what kind of league you're playing. But for me, I'm willing to drop Barkley down a little bit here, and as well as Kamara, if Taysom Hill starts, Kamara legit wasn't even catching the ball. And that's pretty consistent what we've seen out of most running quarterbacks, not really throwing to the running back.
Connor, can you explain something to me? I have been on this on social media. Sean Payton put Taysom Hill in last year in basically a Super Bowl winning team. He thought he had a team that could get to the Super Bowl and win it. So in that moment when Breeze got hurt, he went to Taysom Hill. I understand the process for Jameis Winston, but I do not think, no matter what the beat reporters say, you can think you're going to start Jameis Winston, but am I wrong? Like, he starts throwing a couple picks, Taysom Hill's going to get in there in 2 seconds.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the leash is very, very short. And yeah. I still think that Taysom Hill is going to play, you know, an expanded red zone role. He's going to play in some short situations, you know, on like a 3rd-and-1. Like, who says they're not just going to roll Taysom Hill in there and they'll run like a, you know, like a power run just with him behind, you know, a fullback or two. You know, like, I think that that's very much in play in any short distance situation and at the goal line. So that also, I mean, takes away from Kamara too. If Kamara is not getting a carry in the goal line, then you're giving it to Taysom Hill. So I think that there's a lot of fluctuation there and issues with Kamara, and there definitely should be some warning signs. But the upside is tantalizing, as you said, you know, 6 touchdowns in the fantasy championship last year. But I think the situation is changing a little bit.
You know, I just did one of – I do too many best ball drafts, underdog, FFPC, the whole bit. I did one the other night. I was in the 6th spot, Connor. So I had a choice here. Where do you go? Derrick Henry, Travis Kelce, where do you go with that 6th spot? Let's assume, you know, that it's McCaffrey, Barkley, Dalvin Cook, Kamara, Ezekiel Elliott. Would you go Henry next? Where do you go in that spot?
Yeah, probably Henry at that point. I do think that, you know, Kelce is obviously incredible talent and incredible player, putting up, just ripping off fantasy points. But, you know, Derrick Henry is going to receive all the backfield work in terms of the carry standpoint. You know, their offense should, you know, continue to score plenty of points. Like, he's not a guy that I want to bet against. So I think for me, just position wise, obviously depending on your strategy and something we'll get into later, you know, from, positional standpoint, I like to pick at least one running back in the first 2 rounds. And so, you know, a guy like Derrick Henry is a perfect point to build your roster with.
Yeah, it's a perfect segue because you are on the Establish the Run podcast with Evan Silva and Adam Levitan. You guys did a great job. I listened to that one, Connor. I listened to it on a run. I listened to it in the shower. I was all into that one. You gave a lot of information in that podcast. And I'm just curious because you talked about preseason NFL bets, right? Some of the preseason player prop bets that you're looking at. One of the ones that came up was like, was NFL MVP. And I think they were talking about John Daigle, who mentioned Nick Chubb. And the argument you guys are saying is if Derrick Henry's not going to get the MVP when he runs for 2,000 yards, it's pretty difficult. Talk about some of the player preseason bets that you've already made so far that you like.
Yeah, I mean, I love Daigle, but like realistically, I think that, you know, Nick Chubb would need probably like 2,000, like 2,100 yards and maybe 20 touchdowns. I don't know. I mean, like, which I think the touchdowns are actually like firmly in his range of outcomes. I love the Browns, but, you know, there's no way he's winning MVP. Since 2010, quarterbacks have won 10 of the last 11 years. As the league continues to shift pass heavy, like, it's going to be a quarterback outside of a literally record breaking season. So in terms of like some preseason, bets that I've made, Kyle Pitts, offensive rookie of the year, I actually ended up taking a stab at with Julio Jones looking like he's going to be traded. So I took that at 12-1, which is a FanDuel right now. I mean, I think that it's a near certainty at this point he's traded, which makes Pitts the number 2 option in a high volume, high efficiency offense. And I think that it's certainly in his range of outcomes to turn in the best rookie season ever for a tight end with former tight end coach Arthur Smith, now the head coach, and a very clear path to targets. I get that rookie tight ends struggle from time to time and that it's not generally a good time to bet on a guy as a rookie, especially at the tight end position. But 12-1, this is what I'm saying is when I said before, with Julio Jones being traded, this is kind of how I'm getting exposure to Kyle Pitts. Rather than taking him at like tight end 3, tight end 4, I could bet on him 12-1 and still gain plenty from his blow-up season, if he has that.
Yeah, very smart. And you also got into some interesting ones too. Have you seen anything with passing yardage, things like that?
Yeah.
How has the 17-game schedule affected it? Because, of course, you can be a casual bettor and see the totals and say, oh, wait a minute, that's got to be an under, right? Because you see the numbers that have adjusted. But have you gotten into that at all and how the 17 games affects it? You know, could they be resting players more or could the numbers just skew higher?
So books are actually not really posting too many of these right now. PointsBet is posted some. I just hit a few of them. So I took actually Matthew Stafford over 26.5 passing touchdowns.
Wow.
It felt really light. We even projected for 32. I mean, I'm extremely bullish on this Rams team in general. Great supporting cast, best, you know, coach of his career, and golfed through for more than 26 in half of the years that he was playing, and those were only in 16 games. So, I mean, I think the issue, though, with taking overs in general on season-long props often.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
It's more of a bet on a player staying healthy rather than, you know, him actually performing up to level. But, you know, Stafford could play probably reasonably 15 games and still hit this number, in my opinion.
That's a great point. The addition, too, of DeSean Jackson. I get so frustrated because, Connor, I always take DeSean Jackson in every best ball draft, and then all of a sudden he's hurt 2 weeks in. But those first 2 weeks, man, are impressive. That's the key. And now he's got a guy right in Stafford who can get him the ball. I mean, I think Sean McVay's going to open up the offense here.
Yeah, I also I think part of his contract was like heavily injury incentivized too, so he has a lot of incentives to really work hard on staying out there. And you know, that doesn't always pan out. Obviously, injuries can happen, but I think that that's a good thing and a little bit different than how his previous contracts were structured.
The economy is made up of real people doing real stuff, and it affects everything, which you obviously know since you're a real person doing real stuff. Marketplace is here to help you get smart about everything beyond the what of the day's business and economic news. We dig into the how and the why with the real people driving our economy. From big tech and interest rates to small businesses and what's happening at the Fed, Marketplace breaks it all down so you don't have to. Listen to Marketplace wherever you get your podcasts.
Do you have margaritas, Connor? And if you do, salt or no salt? The reason this came up is we had a Cinco de Mayo celebration with some neighbors, and the big debate became whether salt or no salt. I'm a salt guy. Do you have a margarita? And if so, what goes on the rim there?
Oh, yeah. I love margaritas. I would say that I like salt, and I think if you're feeling a little extra kick, tahine is great.
Tahine, yes,
well.
That's what we put on. Oh my goodness, this was not planned, not on the show sheet. tahine is great. Oh my goodness.
Yeah. I mean, I had to add that in there. I know it's not on the show sheet, but you know, I need to be genuine here with what I'm saying for my margaritas.
Oh, that's a right hook you just gave me there. Great call, tahine, folks. Put it on there. Put it around the rim. Enjoy it on a hot summer day. You know, Connor, here at RotoViz, we are zero RB fans. Sean Siegel, of course, with his work, longstanding works, is one of the great minds in the industry. This year, though, I'm not sure if we're trending towards modified zero RB. Now, some people say that's sort of a paradox. You can't say modified zero RB. But if you go RB first and then a bunch of wide receivers, that seems to be the strategy that I've been using for my best balls. I'm just curious, how do you think zero RB plays out? Do you like modified zero RB? Do you think that it's viable this year, either of those strategies?
Yeah, definitely. So most of the leagues that I play in right now are FFPC, you know, the $350 ones or main events. I actually love the modified zero RB strategy. That has been mine and my co-owner, Joe Pano, who share all of our teams. I mean, we really just try and get one running back in the first two rounds. But again, like, you know, we're at the point where we're okay with going zero RB because we think it's contrarian enough that it can still pan out. We get the anti-fragile fragility aspect of it, which is obviously Sean Siegel has laid out perfectly on your guys' website. And we're big believers in it. There's still a large contingent of high-stakes individuals that will pound four or five running backs in a row to start a high-stakes draft. I mean, running backs are – and this is already in addition to running backs already being way higher up draft boards, it seems like, in this year and last year than, earlier before. So I think that, you know, I think it's a great strategy. I think it's very much in play. I'm never going to force it, but, you know, if I'm able to pull it off, I think it's a great strategy.
Yeah, and last year there was a lot of criticism that it was supposed to be robust RB last year, right? And Sean did it again in a lot of his leagues. A lot of the guys here at RotoViz, Tom Kelly, Dave Caban, everybody there, grab those Miles Gaskins, grab those James Robinsons, right? They found value late in the board. So you go running back early and then grab a bunch of wide receivers and tight ends. You have a pretty anti-fragile lineup, and then you basically look to hit on those late round guys, right? And if you do that, I think you're home free.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that doing the modified zero RB is probably my favorite because you're still getting, you know, some kind of workhorse or someone that can kind of anchor your running back spot. And then you're really just looking for to play the roulette on that RB2. And sometimes you get lucky. Sometimes you get, you know, you get James Robinson and you get a Miles Gaskin, you know, so then you're loaded that at that point, like even if your anchor does get injured, you're still in a good spot. And then you still have, you know, four to maybe even five strong receivers in those middle rounds that are capable of massive games. So that's really why what attracts me to the strategy.
Let's look at ADP overvalued and undervalued. So I'm going to use Underdog's ADP here. Of course, best ball season in full effect, so there's a little strategy and nuance involved. I'm asking, are these players overvalued, undervalued, or maybe even properly valued at the current ADP? I'm going to start with Jonathan Taylor. He's currently going as the RB6. Now, look, end of the season last year, I think he had four RB1 performances in the last 5 weeks and had some pretty high-end RB performances. I'm pretty sure it was the overall RB1 in week 17, which a lot of fantasy leagues don't have. But still, the question is, Marlon Mack has returned. Is he now going to see that increased workload? He was only getting like a 50% opportunity share, 50% snap share for most of the year, and then he really came on. So do you see him RB6? Where do you fall on him in PPR leagues?
Yeah, so I think that RB6 is a little bit overvalued. You know, I think that I would have him closer to like the RB8 range. You know, part of my issues are I'm not really too worried about Marlon Mack. I think that there's enough carries to pay around. It's just that he doesn't get too much work in the passing game, and that's still what matters. I think that he can catch passes. Don't get me wrong. I'm not going to make the argument against that, you know, he can't do it. I think that he's plenty capable, and he showed that last year with how efficient he was on catching the ball. But, you know, I just don't think that he's going to see the work with Nyheim Hines still in the fold. Now we have Carson Wentz, a quarterback, not the checkdown captain, Phillip Rivers, who he used to be. I'm not entirely sold on JT, even though he does have plenty of touchdown upside.
Next one, I'm going to give you both arguments, and then you tell me which one sort of clicks with your mindset. Jalen Hurts. Now, the argument is he has the Konami code. He's going to be running a ton, designed runs. They're probably going to be playing from behind, so he's going to have a lot of opportunity to put points on the board. So he's going, believe it or not, as the current QB8. Now, the counter to that is, listen, just because he runs doesn't mean he's the second coming of Lamar Jackson. They may not be very good. We're still waiting to see on Jalen Reagor. They did add weapons, of course. But, like, maybe you should take a reliable guy who doesn't run like a Tom Brady, who's certainly going to have volume, over Hurts. So he's QB8. Where do you side on the upside versus the risk reward with him possibly, you know, not working out this year as quarterback for the Eagles?
So I would say in terms of, you know, where his actual value is, I think that it's fine, but you are really embracing the risk reward, like you're saying. I actually think that it can be worth it in some instances because his outcomes are very, very wide. You know, I think that he can totally bust. In that instance, you know, you're probably still getting some rushing floor and he's okay. You know, he's probably putting up, you know, low-end QB1 or high-end QB2 numbers. You know, you're not completely dead in the water, but his upside is massive. I mean, they bolstered their offensive line. They added Devonta Smith, and you know he's going to run. So, you know, that kind of upside, I think, is definitely there. You know, I think that that's kind of the issue with just looking at median projections just in general, and that most of the time he's probably finishing right around that range, you know, QB8, QB9. But does he have a QB1 season in him? Sure. And I think that that, again, what kind of league you're playing in, if you're going to win the league, if you're looking for those top-heavy payouts, that's, I think this is the kind of guy that you should be willing to take a risk on, even though the market sharply probably already has him properly valued.
And I bet, Connor, that in redraft leagues, in seasonal leagues, he will not be going as the QB8. I think that is a best ball play. I think for a lot of our listeners here who are playing family leagues and things like that, I do not think Jalen Hurts for your average fantasy person is going QB8. So you could really have little investment in Jalen Hurts for massive upside, right, in seasonal leagues?
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think that if you're able to get him outside of a QB12 range, which I think is very much in play, you know, a lot of these other websites that you'll draft on will have him probably around there anyways, just based on their ADP and on the draft boards, your online draft boards. So, yeah, I think if you can get him around there, I think it's a great value.
Fantasy football and betting is a Bayesian process, right? So we gather new information and we don't suffer take lock. I've been on social media saying I do not understand the Kyle Pitts love at tight end 4. However, when I did do his projection, I saw that if Julio Jones leaves, if they're really committed to running the offense through him and Calvin Ridley like a Travis Kelce, like a George Kittle. The upside is there. You talked about Pitts a little bit before with the preseason wager. Where are you now on Kyle Pitts here at tight end four?
Yeah, I mean, it's Kyle Pitts is just a very polarizing player in fantasy. I was fully ready to fade him, you know, at his ADP if Julio Jones stayed. I was not going to have any money on him in terms of that offensive rookie of the year. And I think that that was totally fine because, you know, being third in the pecking order, you know, is definitely not as exciting. But you're removing Julio Jones, who's, you know, you're probably projecting him for a 20 to 30% target share somewhere in that range. You're removing that from the equation. The targets have to go somewhere. And like I said earlier, you know, he's just set up for success to see volume in a efficient offense with a good quarterback that is a terrible defense that's going to be playing from behind. So right now, his ADP, tight end four, you know, I wasn't expecting to say this, but I think that that's actually fine. And I think that he's actually set up in a good situation where, you know, I don't think that he's going to finish as a tight end one. I'm not sure that he can get over the hump of beating a Darren Waller, beating a Travis Kelce, but he can certainly outperform, you know, many other guys at the position who are, you know, the tight end position is mostly a joke after the top six guys, at least it has been the past few years. It's been just incredibly difficult to project.
And the last one here for ADP, overvalued, undervalued. I love to zig when other people zag. I know in your betting analysis you do as well. Clyde Edwards-Helaire burned a lot of people. I mean, I forget who it was. One of the major analysts there was saying that he was last year going to be the number one pick overall in fantasy. I mean, did not reach that level, just didn't get the touchdowns, right? I feel like in that first game, Connor, he got stopped five times inside the five-yard line, and that was it. He was not going to be scoring that much, but he was used, and he's a great pass catcher, and the Chiefs don't have Sammy Watkins anymore. So I'm curious, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, RB15, where do you fall on him?
Yeah, I think he's a little bit undervalued just because of, you know, like the perception of him. I mean, I think that right now, you know, last year he was like a fringe first round pick by the end of the year, mid second round pick. At this point, you know, I'm willing to take him there again and just kind of double down. It's all the same argument that we had last year. And now he has less competition for touches. I mean, the upside of the offense, touchdown upside is there if he can find his way into the end zone, actually. You know, but I think a lot of that's kind of luck. You know, I don't really think that that's too much of was always his fault. So, and now bolstering the offensive line, I mean, that's a huge deal for this Chiefs team. I think that they could seriously come back with a vengeance, and CEH can be, you know, has just extraordinary upside.
Give me two things that you can't wait to do now that we're coming out of COVID. I feel like, you know, a country is starting to get back to normal, the vaccines. We see fans attending games. I have friends in the NBA who are excited to open up the doors again, get some home court advantage. Give me one thing or two that you're really excited to do now that we're finally out of this quarantine.
Oh, yeah. Thank God. So I'm actually pumped to go to Vegas for the main event this year. Oh. My co-owner and I, Joe, are both going. Yeah, I'm stoked. That'll be, you know, a couple months here right before the season. So I couldn't be more excited.
Oh, my God. Vegas must be crazy. I mean, it must just be an opportunity. You have a hotel. You have picked a hotel out? Do you have a place that you're staying, or you just go and you figure it out when you get there?
No, yeah, well, I'm sure we'll book some stuff coming up here, you know, but now with everything opening up, like the numbers continue to trend better, you know, I think we're going to start making some moves here and probably, you know, get ourselves hooked up. I'm not sure about a penthouse or anything, but we'll probably get a decent room.
After you win some bets, my friend, you go down and count some cards at blackjack, you'll be in the penthouse before you know it. Win totals, over-unders here. You gave some great insight, of course. You're right at the forefront here with these win totals. I made a couple wagers myself. I'm just curious. Ones you like, ones you don't like. Let's start with the ones you like. I'm big on Denver this year on the over. I think they're going to be really good. Who are some teams here that you like for their over here with their preseason win total?
Yeah, so a team that I actually just wrote up here, the Washington football team, mm-hmm. You can still find that at 8 wins. I mean, minus 130 at FanDuel. They replaced Ronald Darby with William Jackson at cornerback. They were already fourth in passing EPA allowed last season, and their rushing defense was strong. They were top 10 unit on the offensive line by the end of the season. And they kept building on that, traded for Eric Flowers, signed Charles Leno, drafted Sam Cosmi in the second round. And this is already building on two guys who had top 10 PFF grades on the offensive line in Brandon Scherff and Chase Roullier. And obviously the biggest acquisition, Ryan Fitzpatrick. I mean, they were dealing with league bottom quarterback play last year, and they were still able to win 7 games in a 16-game season. Now you have a season that's 17 games. You're really just asking them to be above average. And I don't think that's bad at all. Also, I think that they can win the division. Plus 300 is very much in play. So, yeah, the Washington football team for me, definitely a team to bet the over on. If you can still find 8, even 8.5.
Do you tend to stay away from the big numbers? I have people who are always asking me, you know, the Chiefs over-under this year. Remember the Patriots were always beating that over-under number. 11.5, they'd win 12. 12.5 sometimes, which is crazy, they win 13. Do you shy away from big numbers there for overs, or it has to be the, you know, really the right situation?
Yeah, I just think it has to be the right situation. Like, if I'm really, really excited about a team. But this year in particular, with the 17-game season, I'm taking a little bit of a wait-and-see approach on these bigger teams. Like, there's a chance that one of these teams has everything locked up and they can't move, you know, position-wise. And what if they rest guys for the last two games? You know, like, what if that – or a game and a half? And, you know, that could totally throw a wrench in, you know, your win total. And they, you know, they ended up winning, whatever, 13 games or 12 games, and then they know they can't – there's, like, not enough – movement either way. I think there's just a next level of strategy as more games are added. So for me, I'm not really taking too many of the high win total overs right now.
Is there some unders that you like? The ones that jumped out right away, you know, Dan Campbell's speech, the biting of the kneecaps, the whole thing. I think Goff getting away from Sean McVay is going to be like the emperor's clothes a little bit. Their receivers are terrible. They do have a great offensive line, and the defensive line is solid. But Detroit under, I think it was 5 I got it at, was one that jumped out. Of course, the Texans are a disaster. Any unders here that jumped out right away that you sort of like?
Yeah, no, I mean, I love that Lions under 5 wins. I've talked about this, you know, a bunch on some different podcasts, but for all the reasons you said, only thing I add to there, would be, you know, some look-ahead lines came out from the Westgate Superbook. The Lions are not favored in a single game, and to make things even more impressive, 11 of their games, they're an underdog by a touchdown or more. They're just two games as an underdog as a field goal or closer. So, like, there's, like, two toss-up games. And even those, I mean, that's against Philly and Cincinnati, who I think are just better teams. Like, those are teams with upward trajectories. I would not surprise me at all if the Lions are the worst team in the league. I actually, you know, put $20 on them being 0-17 at like 100-1 when it opened at DraftKings, or 80-1 at DraftKings. And I thought that was just a little fun play, fun shot, but I think it's definitely in the range of outcomes.
Yeah, I agree with you on the Lions. Totally. Got one more here for us.
Yeah, so I also like the Raiders under 7.5 Ooh. Wins. I think that the hook there is a little bit important, though. They have the hardest strength of schedule in the league using opponent win totals, and they're only favored in 5 games next season. I mean, looking at their draft, they once again whiffed the overdrafting players. You know, Alex Leatherwood was a fringe first-round pick, and they picked him 17th overall. But the big news is they lost 3 of their 5 starting offensive linemen, which was actually a big strength for them. And then they ended up signing Colton Miller to a big contract and keeping the, you know, the psycho himself, Richie Incognito, who's 38 years old. Their defense dead last in run DEPA, 27th in pass DEPA last year. I mean, they didn't do a ton to address this. If that doesn't take a step forward, even with the addition of Yannick Ngakoue, like, I think that the under here, their floor is extremely low. And their ceiling, I don't think, is that high. So I think that they're more of a, you know, 7-10 team or a 6-11 team. Feels weird to say that, but I think that's more where they're at.
I took a shot this year. I actually entered the predicting the NFL draft contest for the first time. I did okay. I had 6 matches and had 28 players, I think, in the first round. But the Alex Leatherwood pick was not anywhere in my range of outcomes. I think a lot of people were scratching their heads. Even Josh Norris, who killed it, had a fantastic draft. I mean, I think everybody's like, Leatherwood. I mean, I think people saw second round maybe, but it was early. I mean, the Raiders, they continue to befuddle us, right? When they make these draft picks, you never know what the Raiders are going to do.
We should have expected this after they picked Clelin Ferrell, like, 4th overall, you know, when no one even had him projected in the top 10. That was just, I mean, that was worse than this. Probably, but I don't know, man. This was just weird, too.
The only noise you hear after their pick at home is people going like this. They just start looking through their papers to find the player. Time for redraft lightning round. Give me the player that you prefer here. I'll give you 2 choices. Half-point PPR, let's say, at their current ADP. DeAndre Swift or J.K. Dobbins? You have Swift with the Lions, of course. Like we said, could be a lot of passing, a lot of opportunities for him to catch passes. J.K. Dobbins on a really solid Ravens team that has Super Bowl aspirations, but Gus the Bus is there. Who do you like better? Swift is going one spot higher right now.
So just to be transparent, I probably won't have much of either. But, you know, if I had a gun to my head, I'd probably say Swift just because he catches passes. And I think that there's plenty of chance for negative game script, as we talked about with that being behind. So probably Swift.
J.J. Zacharyson always talks about going to, you know, crowded backfields to get an ambiguous backfield to get your sleepers. So I'm going to ask you here, two rookie RBs that could really come into play maybe early or even later in the year. Javonte Williams out there in Denver, Melvin Gordon, I thought he was going to get cut, but I don't think so anymore. Or Trey Sermon out in San Francisco, Raheem Mostert is still there. Who do you prefer out of those two rookie running backs?
Yeah, so I think in best ball, I'm a little bit of a cop out here. Best ball, Trey Sermon, I think is good because the just like the amount that Kyle Shanahan feeds the hot hand, you're not going to know which week it's going to be that Trey Sermon is going to get 15 carries, and you know the other guys are going to get Raheem Mostert's going to get 8. But you know in best ball, that's perfect. That's totally fine because you'll get those spike weeks. In redraft, in main event leagues, I prefer Javonte Williams. I think that he has more standalone upside, and that you know there's more likely for the Broncos to kind of ride him just from day one. I think he should have a solid role anyways.
And if you are going modified zero RB and you're looking for late veterans who people really aren't interested in, I'll go to one before we just mentioned Gus Edwards or now James Conner in Arizona. I don't think they trust Chase Edmonds at the goal line. So I think Conner could be used, but is he used enough to pick him over Gus Edwards? That's my question.
Yeah, I'd probably go Gus Edwards. I think he's 1B to Dobbins 1A. And I think that was true based on the post-Mark Ingram usage and that we're going to see a little bit closer splits there, even though, yeah, I think Gus Edwards probably.
And final one, Tyler Boyd or Juju Smith-Schuster, both of them looking as sort of the third option in passing offenses. Tyler Boyd now, of course, Jamar Chase is there, T. Higgins, but he's Mr. Reliable over the middle. Juju Smith-Schuster in Pittsburgh burned a lot of people, including myself, last year. He comes back on a prove-it deal. Boyd is currently going three spots higher at wide receiver 34. So Boyd at wide receiver 34 or Juju wide receiver 37.
Yeah, I'll take Tyler Boyd. I think that I'll probably have plenty of exposure to him. I think that his chances as a fringe wide receiver 2/3 in PPR leagues and even half PPR leagues. Bengals play a ton of 11 personnel. I think that Chase actually helps open up things more underneath for him. And, you know, he kind of looked like a security blanket for Joe Burrow last year, who seems like is on track to play, you know, week one and be, you know, close to normal. Whereas Juju, you know, might play more outside, which I actually think is not good for him. As a guy who's actually largely been better in the slot outside of his probably increased ADOT on playing on the outside.
Yeah, you know what's funny with Juju is last year people were very high on him coming in. You know, of course, has all the stuff on social media, very popular. And then all of a sudden you look up and he's sort of down in the pecking order. But Connor, he did last year. He did have 97 receptions. It's just that his receiving yardage was 831 receiving yards. Ranked 7th in receptions, Juju Smith-Schuster, 36th in receiving yards for a guy that played 16 games. Very odd, no?
Yeah, and I was definitely big on Juju last year, but I just didn't think that Ben's arm would fall off. I didn't think that they would be having him run, you know, like just crossing routes 2 yards away from the line of scrimmage like the entire game. You know, I thought they'd at least kind of having some run some deeper stuff, you know, out of the slot. But if your quarterback can't throw that far, then, you know, it's kind of an issue.
If you were on Fear Factor, what's the one thing that you'd say, no way? I see the buried alive and you have to get out. The one that I struggle with is going in a box of snakes. That would not be high on my list. Even if you gave me Super Bowl tickets the rest of my life, what's the one thing on Fear Factor you'd say, you know what? I can't do it.
That's funny you said box of snakes. So mine's actually like a box of spiders. So I saw one where the guy had to stick his head in a box of tarantulas for 3 minutes and try and not move. I mean, there's just straight up no shot I even like get in there. Like I had to not put my head in there, just no shot.
We should do a Fear Factor here on RotoViz with all the analysts. I have a feeling that Sean would win that one again. I don't know. I'd be done. That's for sure. The AFC North, always challenged to predict, and I think it's interesting to look at this division because normally you eliminate the Browns and Bengals. That's what we've done for the last decade, right? But now you look at the Browns and Bengals. Browns are really solid, talking about them making the Super Bowl. Bengals, of course, Burrow comes back, has an explosive offense, and now I want to focus on the Ravens and the Steelers. So here's the thing. You have the Steelers, Ben at QB, he's aging. Article came out today talking about how his entire elbow had to be reconstructed. That's certainly not good. And then, of course, the Ravens receiving game. Let's start with Pittsburgh. How do you project Pittsburgh win total example, how they're going to do this year with Ben there, a quarterback looking for one more run because they usually are solid. But I'm starting to look, Connor, I don't know if they're not the third best team in their own division now.
Yeah, I think they are. I mean, I think that they should take a step back. Their win total is actually 8.5. I mean, well below the Browns and Ravens, who are both at 10 or above. Ben looked really dusty down the road, kind of like we mentioned previously. Their O-line didn't improve enough to take the heat off him. And with a running game, I mean, they drafted a running back, congrats, but you know, I don't think that's going to do too much to their running game, or at least enough so that Ben doesn't have to throw a bunch. And their defense lost a few key players, so they won't be as dominant either. In a strong division, the second toughest overall strength of schedule using opponent win totals. I mean, this, I think that they're actually priced appropriately at 8 wins or 8.5 wins in terms of the market. But I mean, I think that they could very easily win 7. They could very easily be a losing team this year. So I think that the, you know, the Browns and the Ravens are clear favorites in this division in my mind.
And then looking at the Ravens, of course, we look at their offense. Marquise Brown, very disappointing last year, except for those couple games at the end of the year where he caught a fourth quarter passes to hit his over prop, by the way, in receiving yards. Thank you very much, Marquise. But it's been a tough run for him so far. Did not establish himself as the wide receiver one. He's diminutive. He had the screws in his foot after the first year. We expected a big year. Now they have Sammy Watkins, who really has not had consistency, even with Patrick Mahomes, and they draft Rashad Bateman. So I'm curious, where do you think the pecking order is in the Ravens receiving game? We know they're going to be run heavy, but someone has to step up, and Mark Andrews doesn't seem to get the volume of a Kelce or a Kittle. So I feel like there is value here. Maybe Marquise Brown bounces back, but I'm kind of going somewhere else. What do you think about the Ravens passing game?
Yeah, so we have it projected. Rashad Bateman is like kind of like the clear number one, you know, in,
yes.
Then Marquise Brown, number two, Watkins, number three, kind of in that order, the pecking order. I mean, I didn't think Watkins looked good either. I think that, I mean, I'm not saying that he's entirely, you know, out of gas, but I think he's pretty close. And you know, Marquise, I'm just not sure he can be reliable. I think that he could be efficient. And I think that, again, maybe a better in best ball type of player. But, you know, I don't really see him being a weekly guy that you want to bet on in redraft leagues.
You talked about some long shot bets here, which I thought were fascinating. I think I hit rewind while I'm in the shower. I almost electrocuted myself. But give me some long shot bets you had here for the NFL that you think could actually come out. You mentioned a couple that I thought were fantastic.
Yeah, so I'll give you a few here. The first one, I know that it's really long. It's I bet Kyle Trask at 100-1 to win Rookie of the Year at FanDuel. I mean, again, this is a really, really long shot. But, you know, Brady, who's in his mid-40s, like pretty much the oldest starting quarterback in NFL history, gets injured at all. I think that the supporting cast is there for Kyle Trask to make a run at this award. He's also already received praise from Bruce Arians. So I think that he's a backup quarterback heading into the season. I mean, God forbid anything happens to Brady after – I mean, even if he plays half the season, like I think that Trask is reasonable to like still win this award if he actually plays well, given the supporting cast, which I think he should. So at 100-1, like, again, I know it's thin, but put like 0.1 units on it, like a tenth of a unit or a quarter of a unit, you know, like something like that, that if it does pay off, you'll look, you know, you'll be featured on all of these like Bleacher Report betting accounts, and Action Network will be tweeting you about. Maybe you'll get a Ravel shout out there.
Ravel, yes.
But yeah, so that's one that I like. A one that's a little bit less, Tua Tagovailoa at 60-1 to win MVP. I think that his range of outcomes are really high. When betting the MVP, you want to bet on a guy with a high win total, a guy that's going to be on a team that can win and, plays the quarterback position. You know, sorry, Daigle again, you know, I'm going to apologize there. you know, they added, Jalen Waddle. They added Will Fuller. They still have Devontae Parker and Tua Tagovailoa, another year removed from his injuries. Their offensive line is still a little bit shaky, but he was playing with guys who could do nothing but separate at Alabama, and he looked fantastic. He was a great downfield passer. And now, you know, last year he had only Devontae Parker, who can't separate for his life. You know, that's just kind of who he is as a player. He's a lot better of a jump ball receiver and like kind of deep threat or to intermediate. But now you have Jalen Waddle, now you have Will Fuller, guys who can do nothing but run away from other people. So I think that it's worth a shot at 60-1 and anything over 50-1 for sure.
You know, that's a great call with Tua. In 2018, Connor, everyone talked about how he's the next great quarterback there at Alabama. He dominates. 2019, he goes out, gets off to a great start, right? 33 touchdowns, 3 interceptions through 9 games. I mean, just an incredible pace. He gets hurt. And then right up to the draft that year, people were saying they're going to go Justin Herbert, Miami, over Tua. And then at the last second, something came out and the odds flipped, right? That's when you know you're toasted when you're doing draft picks, right?
Oh, yeah.
And you're betting on draft. The odds flipped that he had a clear bill of health. Fitzpatrick starts. They make the move. I mean, the guy came back quickly from an injury. Like you said, he did not have a ton of weapons. Miles Gaskin in the backfield. Salvin Ahmed was there. I mean, he didn't really have a ton. And this year, that's a great call. I feel like recency bias is setting in with Tua, no? He was a really hot quarterback that people thought was going to be the number one overall pick. And now all of a sudden, he's getting really criticized for what happened last year, I think.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't have a good season. You know, there's no getting around that. But now if we kind of like take a step back and look at the bigger picture of everything, you know, I think that just the range of outcomes here for a player like him is just really wide. You know, I think that the Dolphins can very well be like an average team if he doesn't play well. But if he does play well, I mean, I think that they can be a great team. I think that they can win the division. I think that they can, you know, and that would largely be on the back of the defense and him, you know, probably hitting his new weapons. And, I mean, Will Fuller has been perennially underrated as long as he can stay on the field in some instance. And Jaylen Waddle would have, I mean, been in play here instead of Jamar Chase, I think, if he had been healthier too as well. He was the number one receiver on Alabama prior to his injury. You know, he was ahead of Devonta Smith and outperforming him. So,
and let's not forget with Will Fuller, I mean, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 consecutive games with a touchdown, wide receiver 9, wide receiver 3 performances, wide receiver 2, week 12 before he went out there. So let's remember that he is certainly a legitimate option, just a great player in Will Fuller if he's out there. Connor, this has been amazing. Fantastic stuff as always. One more question, then we will get you out of here. With all the analysis that you do, the knowledge from both the wagering side and the fantasy side, which I think is great. It really can illustrate value if you can combine both worlds, which you can. I want the Connor Allen bold prediction for the 2021 season. Something you think in the fantasy world that's a little out there. You gave us Kyle Trask with a great argument, by the way. What do you think is something that could happen here in fantasy in 2021?
Oh man, this is tough because it's so early, but I'll go out on a limb here. And, you know, I bashed this earlier in the episode, but Nick Chubb, overall RB1, 20 rushing touchdowns.
Oh, wow. You know,
1600 yards, 20 rushing touchdowns, still does not win MVP, but the Browns win 14, 15 games and Nick Chubb has 20 touchdowns.
There it is. You're making me feel guilty on passing on Nick Chubb in the second round of my FFPC best ball last night. Connor Allen, folks, amazing work here at 4 for 4, the Move the Line podcast. Got to listen to it with him and Ryan Noonan. Follow him on Twitter at Connor Allen NFL. Great stuff. Great mind. Connor, this flew by bad, and it was an honor to have you on here to kick off the Road of His Mailbag season for 2021. We'll definitely have you on again soon.
Yeah, really appreciate it, and always great to talk some football ahead of the season.
Thank you for listening to RotoViz Radio. Please rate and review the podcast on iTunes under the Fantasy Football Mailbag, a RotoViz Radio feed. Contact us via email, rotovizradio@gmail.com. We'd love to hear what you think, so follow us on Twitter at RotoViz Radio and at Randall Rant. Make sure you tell a friend, and don't forget to sign up for a 10% discount on our podcast homepage, rotoviz.com/podcast. It's a no-brainer, folks. Thanks for tuning in.